Hi, friends. Welcome to Spilling the Beans podcast, where we spill the beans on all things intuitive eating, health at every size, body acceptance, and gentle nutrition. I'm your host and registered dietitian, Amanda Lambrix, and you may know me as @spillingthebeans_nutrition on Instagram and Facebook. Go ahead, get comfortable, grab a snack, and let's get started spilling the beans. Welcome back to our show. Today we are moving on to Principle 9 of our Intuitive Eating series, which is Exercise, Feel the Difference. I'm so honored to have Heather Kaplan on today, and if you don't already know who Heather is a US-based registered dietitian with a virtual private practice. She is the founder of Weight Inclusive Nutrition and Dietetics, also known as WIND. She also hosts the weekly podcast RD Real Talk, where she chats with fellow dietitians about the anti-diet, weight-inclusive paradigms. Her work has been featured in national publications such as The Washington Post, Runner's World, Eating Well, and on NBC's Today Show, which we talk about in this episode. Follow her work on Instagram. She has two different accounts. You can follow for more of her podcast information on @RDRealTalk. And for more of her sports nutrition stuff, follow her at HeatherDCRD. And you can also find all of this information on heatherkaplan.com. And Kaplan is spelled with a C. In this episode, we talk about how to tell if you have an intuitive relationship with exercise, whether you can follow a training plan and still be intuitive, and some of our own stories about our journey with exercise, and also so much more. You guys are going to love Heather if you don't already know who she is. All right, welcome, Heather. I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Amanda.
So if people that are listening right now don't already know who you are, which I'm sure they probably do, can you just tell my listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I host a podcast called RD Real Talk. So if maybe they've heard of that, maybe they haven't. I am a registered dietitian and based in the DC area and have been in this non-diet, anti-diet world for the past couple of years. I focus primarily on active women in my private practice and have worked with athletes at lots of different levels. So that will be relative to our conversation today, but mostly do a lot of work around treating disordered eating and some eating disorders and helping people just kind of unlearn what we internalize and take as normal and culturally acceptable through diet culture.
I think one of the first places I had heard of you, you know, this has been a couple of years ago now, was with your podcast. It was recommended to me a lot when I was first learning more about intuitive eating and weight neutral approaches. And then I also remember seeing you were on the Today Show. Am I right?
Yes. Oh, that feels like so long ago, but it was like less than 2 years ago. Yes, I was on Megyn Kelly's talk show when Megyn Kelly still had a talk show, which does not exist anymore on the Today Show. And one of her producers reached out because they were doing an episode on orthorexia. Honestly, one of the more like random and surreal things that has happened to me in my life. But it was a really great experience. I don't generally watch morning television, mostly because it's just never been part of my routine. But if I do watch a show in the morning, sometimes on my days off when I'm hanging with my kiddo, we'll turn it on for a little while. And it would be typically the Today Show. And the reason that I was so surprised to get the email that I got was the Today Show and other morning shows tend to be very diety. Like there is a lot of diet talk. There's a lot of just like normalized disordered statements, a lot of fat phobia. It's a lot of like weight loss transformation stories and the newest this and the newest that. And not that that's true 100% of the time, but it feels like it's true a lot of the time. Like I feel like I can't watch a morning TV show without being like, wait, what? No, why are we talking about this? So it was an interesting opportunity to be able to go on one of those shows and talk about orthorexia, kind of ironically, when it's those types of shows that often peddle around really misleading diet advice and really clickbaity type things.
Yeah, I remember seeing it spread in some of the Facebook groups I was in, and they were like, hey, Heather's on there. We've got a dietitian representing, and it's in a very different way than is traditionally seen. And I felt like a proud dietitian in that moment to see someone so cool that was being represented on national television.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect clip, and you don't have like all the time in the world to talk about all the things you want to. Obviously, like, I don't control the conversation, but yeah, it was a great segment. I was on, I think, just before the CEO, Claire Misko, of the National Eating Disorders Association. And there was another woman on there who had a nonprofit, or has a nonprofit, called the Southern Smash, I think. And it's, she goes around to college campuses doing like scale smashing. And it was a really interesting lineup. And again, just kind of a cool opportunity to get to go on and talk about the ways in which diet culture is spread around. And I mean, obviously, again, like, shows like that are perpetuating something like orthorexia. But hey, if I can get a chance to talk about it, I'll take it.
You're absolutely right. I think whenever I turn on the TV, when I do have a chance to watch those morning shows, often it is that they're highlighting, you know, right now we're in the middle of the pandemic, at least when we're recording this. We'll see what happens when this is going live in a month or so. But usually it's like, how do I not put on weight while I'm in quarantine? And very much those popular headlines. So it's refreshing to see that they are talking about things like when we're obsessed with our eating and making it perfect and our exercise, even though, like you said, I think there's still some work to be done that they maybe don't realize that they're also contributing to some of that problem.
Right. There's some irony there, but you know, take the chances when we get them.
Yeah, exactly. And also to just kind of realizing, you know, maybe they're kind of in the middle of realizing some things about the harm they're doing and trying to move in a different direction. And as we know, it can be slow move. So I try to give the benefit of the doubt when I can.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the reasons that I had initially thought of you for this episode on Principle 9 exercise is because I know that you are a running coach, that you're into running and have been into athletics over the years. And I thought you would be someone who would be able to give a different perspective from more of that athlete perspective, but then also being a dietitian and working with clients, I thought you might be really good at shedding light on from that perspective as well. So I kind of wanted to start off just by hearing a little bit, as much as you're willing to share, about how your relationship with exercise has evolved over the years.
Sure. My relationship with exercise has changed quite a bit since childhood and then college and young adulthood, etc. I was a quote-unquote athlete growing up in that I played sports. I was mostly a soccer player and kind of dabbled in some other sports, but never felt competent in other sports. So stuck with soccer and enjoyed that. And soccer was always just a way for me to stay connected to friends and do something that had always been part of my life. I think it just became sort of part of my identity. So I stuck with it. And then going into college, I didn't have that team sport as part of my life anymore and realized I really missed it. And so I started running and got kind of wrapped up in running as a means of exercise for some disordered reasons, I would say. A lot of it was like, well, it's the most efficient way to burn calories, or it's a higher intensity exercise than this or that. But also, it's a relatively accessible form of exercise if you don't want to go to a gym or you don't belong to a sports team. It's something you can just go and do, right? So there was kind of the ease and convenience of it, as well as some disordered underlying motivations. And then as I transitioned out of college and into the real world, and I got into some distance running, meaning for me, longer distances were like 10K, half marathon, and eventually the marathon distance. That was mostly related to the community that I connected with around running in the DC area. So I did my dietetic internship in the DC area and then ended up staying here with my first job and pretty much ever since. And to meet people, I went to running groups, like running meetups. And if anyone listening remembers the website meetup.com, it feels like a huge internet flashback, but it used to be a thing. So I looked up some running groups, mostly because I didn't know where to go. Like, I remember thinking, like, if I go for a run, where do I go? Because I'd never lived in a big city before and didn't know like where it was safe to run or not to run and all of those things. So anyway, I met up with this running group. And since then, running has really been just a way to stay connected to community. It's how I've met a lot of my friends. I enjoy the challenge of it. I enjoy the ease of it. I enjoy the convenience of it. I've enjoyed doing races in other cities and even other countries as a means to just kind of explore and get some free time on my feet to really literally just run around and like look at the scenery. And thankfully, I'm sure we'll dive into this throughout the conversation, but thankfully for me, like doing a lot of personal work and doing a lot of work around intuitive eating, it's not something at all that is tied up to, you know, body image, or it's not a compensatory behavior. It's not something I do because it's high intensity or it can be, you know, it's just honestly something that I really enjoy that has brought a lot to my life. And that has always been, it's been a constant for me for the past probably close to 15 years at this point. So it just feels like a familiar friend.
Do you, you know, you mentioned a little bit that initially some of it may have been wrapped up a little bit in diet culture and knowing that, okay, I know I can burn a certain amount of calories doing this. And it isn't necessarily that I have to be pumping iron in the gym for, you know, however many hours. Did you notice that that motivation changed over time? Obviously, it has to be to where you are now, but do you think it was gradual or did that stick with you for a while?
Yeah, so I first remember that mindset shifting for me when I signed up for my first running event, like my first race, basically. And again, this is not competitive. These are all very recreational races. But, you know, you register and there's a day and a time and you show up and you run the course and get a medal or whatever. So my senior year of college, I convinced a friend of mine, who was one of my roommates at the time, to do a race with me because I was kind of curious about running longer distances. And what I have this really, really vivid memory of my first long run day. So anyone who's done a training cycle knows that you kind of have different types of workouts throughout your week, depending on what you're training for. And if it's a longer distance, and you typically have a day during the week where you run a little bit longer than you have before, or than is normal for you. So it's a relative term, but I remember my first long run day, I started thinking, like, my nutrition brain kind of kicked in and was like, well, if you want to run for the certain amount of time or the certain distance, you have to eat enough for your body to be able to do that. You know, you can't just wing it. You can't just expect your body to be okay for this amount of time or this new distance without giving it what it needs. And so this was my senior year. I was about to graduate with a degree in nutrition. So thankfully, some of it had stuck and like some of it was being applied to real life. And I remember eating that day with a lot less rigidity than I was used to. And for those listening who don't know, kind of alluded to this on the Today Show thing, but I was very orthorexic in college and was really restrictive with my eating. So running became this initially a vehicle for me to practice that idea of unconditional permission to eat. Although I could argue that in that first phase, it was somewhat conditional because it was kind of tied to the fact that I was running. And I didn't necessarily see running as compensation for food, but I did see myself using running as permission to eat more. So it was like, okay, well, this clearly isn't enough. Or like, I felt really crappy on that run. I bet I'm not eating enough. I bet I'm not really giving my body what it needs. So for me, it was a very helpful teacher in learning body respect and learning to honor what our bodies really need. And that continued for me for years. So running for me over those couple of years in my early 20s was very healing, and I learned a lot about myself through the sport. But in many, many cases, the opposite is true, and it is something that people lean heavily on for compensation or for permission to eat even what would be considered a relatively small amount. So it can be tough to navigate that, but I think in some ways it can be very healing, and that was certainly true for me.
Yeah, I have a similar history of running. I was a cross country runner from freshman year of high school until senior year, and I would say I wasn't the top runner or anything. We I think had about 6 varsity runners typically, and I was probably like, I don't know, runner 5 or 6 most of the time. So I wasn't like the top runner, but I had a lot of enthusiasm for it and I enjoyed it. And I just had a lot of anxiety, I think, about performing well on a team. So I got more into running once I got into college on my own. And then I probably took road races more seriously than someone normally does. And I was just like, oh, I have to get this place all the time. And most people are just, you know, out there running because it's a breast cancer awareness race. You know what I mean? Right. And so even something like that with my type A competitiveness, which is not all that uncommon for dietitians, I've learned over the years, I think I took something that started out kind of fun, like, let's just see if I can still run these miles now that I've graduated and I'm pulled away from these team sports. And then that also kind of became a slippery slope. And now recently I've been, after taking some time off from running, getting back into it now that I had just adopted a dog who has a lot of energy. And so we've been doing very intuitive runs because she can't go super, super long and she has to sniff everything. So I've kind of seen the extremes of running certain distances, and now I'm kind of coming around to that relationship. And I think it also has taught me that it's okay to have those phases in our relationship with exercise, and that right. we don't have to get caught up in our identity as a runner or, you know, what other sport you're in maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, what has always been helpful, and I always mention this with clients because I've written a lot about how running has been healing for me and how it was part of my process of treating disordered eating and learning about body respect. But I think that is largely true because I'm not a super competitive person. And like, I just don't have that gene. So like I can get it a little bit, but it's not entirely what drives me. And I never becomes like the primary factor for me. So I'm kind of missing that gene. And I never ran competitively. So when I do a race locally for fun, whatever, I can get a little competitive with myself. But the sport itself doesn't bring up a lot of history for me because it was never a sport that I participated in on its own, right? Like, get me on a soccer field, it's a different story. But, you know, and like soccer can very quickly become not fun for me because I used to be better at it and now I'm not good at it because I haven't played in 10 years. And, you know, like that can trigger more for me than running ever has, because running has always been something I've done. Or, you know, 99% of my experience with running has been really positive and has been as an adult with no team or, you know, nothing really on the line. It's just been for fun. So I think there's a big difference there.
Yeah. And actually, when you mentioned that, it kind of brought up a thought for me too. And I think I mentioned right off the bat that I definitely wasn't the best runner in high school. And sometimes I think part of the reason that I took it so seriously in college is once I realized I actually was performing well in these races and people around me kind of, even though I identified myself as a runner, they also saw that as well. Mm-hmm. And it almost put this extra pressure on myself because it was like, oh, well, I didn't shine in high school, but now people are recognizing that I'm not the worst runner on my varsity team, you know? Right. So I can see where there would be that difference where if you hadn't grown up with that identity and you took it up as your form of exercise and also stress relief, I think running can be such a great stress reliever too, you might have that different relationship because of how running started out for you.
Yeah. And you bring up a really good point about just kind of our like deep-seated needs as humans. And we can talk about that a little bit more because that's something I've been learning more about as well. But one of them is like a sense of accomplishment and attention from others. And I've definitely been in a similar position, not quite to that extent, because again, I've never run competitively and I'm not like, you know, winning any local races or anything. But sometimes when I meet new people who aren't runners, or I get, you know, into a new community of people who don't run the way that I do or that I have in the past and are not my running friends, it's like, oh, you run marathons. Wow. Or like, you know, they hear a time and it sounds fast to them. Like, again, these are all very relative things. And so then like, it's easy to absorb that identity that other people kind of assign to you, right? Because sometimes it feels good and sometimes it comes with a lot of accolades that you weren't expecting and like maybe didn't know you needed, you know? So I think that's a really important thing to highlight as well, is just that, you know, we can have all the good intentions and be very intuitive about our movement, and we can still be thrown into situations where we're a little caught off guard by how it's received by others and then how that impacts us as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it just kind of shows how similar to how we might be in different stages of our relationship with food. It might be the same for whatever movement we do. So you might go to, we'll say, a spin class at your local gym, and you might just be going because it's fun. And then, you know, the people next to you or the instructor's really dragging on about how, yes, we got to burn this many calories and whatever. And it, you can have this completely different relationship with the same activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you don't know when those triggers are going to come up. Like, if that happens to me, I'm like, well, not going back to that studio. Like, wasn't expecting that, but thanks.
Exactly. Even in places that I would consider more of like a safe environment, like often you hear of yoga and the recovery space. And I mean, even I've been to classes around, say, Thanksgiving, and the instructors will talk about, doing extra because of a meal. And I'm like, isn't yoga supposed to be the sacred place? I thought it was safe.
No, nothing is completely immune to diet culture.
Yeah. And that actually brings up a good point. I remember you saying, for people that don't know, part of the reason I also know you is because I've attended your wind workshop for two different times. And I think you had mentioned once, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you had mentioned how we can't necessarily always guarantee a safe space, but right. We can guarantee a brave space. And I really liked that phrasing, and it's something I've started using myself too.
Yeah. If we're entering a safe space, there are protections in place to assure that no one's triggered, no one's going to be offended, you won't be hurt, you won't be caught off guard. And I don't know that we can ever really guarantee that. But if we are creating a brave space, or maybe trying to create brave spaces for ourselves, we can kind of say, you know, this is a space you enter knowing that there's a possibility that you may feel triggered or offended or caught off guard or uncomfortable. You kind of sit with that and you embrace it and take care of yourself, know what's important for you. So like, there would have been a time in my life where if I had gone to a yoga studio and noticed that repeatedly the instructors talked about detoxing and the, special diets that prevent X, Y, and Z cancer or whatever, I would have said, it's probably not good for me to come back here. And you just have to know, you have to learn to know that about yourself, because ultimately we are the only ones that can really create environments for ourselves like that. And again, we can't protect ourselves from everything, and we're not immune to triggers, and the world is not immune to diet culture. But hopefully, as you start to recognize those things, you put structure in place to protect yourself as much as you need to.
As far as principle nine, kind of diving into that, using both our experiences and then also what we see with our clients and in what we've learned in this new paradigm, because certainly this, at least for me, this is not what I learned about in school with intuitive eating and health at every size. If you had to describe to someone, what is intuitive movement, or how can I exercise with this new lens? Is there a way that you would describe that?
Yeah, I think first it's important to highlight why we might use movement instead of exercise. So in past editions of the Intuitive Eating book, they have used the word exercise. And in the upcoming edition, they use the word movement. And that's a very intentional shift, because most people, when they think of the word exercise or they hear the word exercise, will have a vision of something structured and routine and exact, and that like kind of fits a certain description, right? So maybe that's like the moderate to high intensity type exercise, or maybe it's burning a certain number of calories, maybe it's a certain number of time that you spend moving. But when we think about movement, we remove the box, right? We can remove the structure within which we tend to define exercise, and we can be a lot more creative with how we define movement. And one thing that comes to mind for me when I first started to think about this was in a past job doing some health coaching in corporate wellness. I remember one client who told me that they spent a lot of time gardening and working on their yard, and asked, like, can that count as my exercise? And thankfully, at the time, I was like, sure, like, why wouldn't that count? It's movement, and it's something you enjoy, and it's relieving stress. But, our traditional training would tell us, well, no, because you need to be walking or running or at a gym or at a spin studio or something that fits the cultural definition of exercise, right? So I think, again, like, first is kind of parsing out how you think about exercise versus how you think about movement. And then thinking through what a healthy relationship to both of those things looks like will mean identifying your motivations and your intentions. So you mentioned like having intuitive movement, and I think that comes with a lot of intention around honoring what feels good to you, honoring what's fun for you, honoring all the reasons you might be doing something that serve you, but being able to identify and recognize the things that don't serve you or the things that do play into diet culture and are maybe more related to something like body manipulation or, quote, weight management or something like that.
Yeah, and that ties so nicely into what I was going to ask you next is how can we decipher if our motivations are intuitive or if we're maybe kind of telling ourselves, oh, I just want to be healthy and this does feel good to me. But sometimes beneath all of that, when we really look closely, there might be more of this, I want to look like, I don't know, an Instagram model or whatever is the thing nowadays. How can we get real honest with ourselves?
Yeah, I think one question that's important to ask ourselves is, would I do this even if there were no physical, like outward physical outcomes? Right? Because if we're honoring intuitive movement and we're being honest about our intentions and it's something that feels good to us, and of course there are health benefits to exercise. So I think there's nothing wrong with honoring the fact that it's also good for our bodies if we're able to do it in a safe way, right? Then if we think through, okay, I do, you know, I run because XYZ, but would I still run if I didn't think that it held promise of or the illusion of a certain body type or a certain outcome for my body? You know, if we're really honest with ourselves, could we say, initially, if you had asked me in college, like, would you still run if it didn't affect your body in any way, or it didn't hold this illusion of a certain body type, I probably would have been like, no, I don't like it that much. You know, I've learned to love it. And I've learned to come to a place with it where, again, all the reasons I mentioned before, like it's really important to me. But there have also been lots of times in my life where I've decided not to run for any given number of times. I mean, at the moment, I haven't run in like 6 months and I don't care. You know, like I talked to my husband, he's like, do you miss it? I'm like, no, because it wouldn't feel good right now. So why would I do it? You know, for anyone listening, I'm very pregnant. That's why. So yeah, I think it comes down to like, if there wasn't the promise of a certain outcome, and again, those promises largely come from diet culture messages that we internalize, would you still do it? Is this still something that's fun for you? You know, is this still something that you enjoy on some level? Because we can have lots of intuitive intentions. We can have lots of intentions that do really serve our mental health, our overall well-being, lots of things about a certain type of movement that do make us very happy. And it can still be tied to diet culture. And so the trick is learning how to untie those things and be honest with yourself about why you might be doing it on any given day or in any given phase of your life.
Yeah. Well, and another thing too, you know, you just mentioned you're at peace with taking a little bit of a hiatus from running right now because of your current circumstances. But do you think there's other times where there might be indicators, you know, besides being pregnant or maybe being injured? But for example, if I'm feeling really anxious, if I miss my run, say I run every single day, if I miss one of my runs and I'm feeling anxious, is that maybe a good time for me to take a good look at my relationship with movement?
Absolutely. I think that brings up a great point. We don't have to wait for some drastic life phase to happen.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've taken many breaks in the past. Again, like I've had times where my husband and I spent about 2 years out in California for his graduate program. And we did a lot of races like back to back, just because we were so excited to like run in different cities. You know, we did like races in San Francisco and along the Bay and Big Sur. It was like, oh, this is so fun. But then I reached a point where I was really tired and I was kind of burned out, and I was tired of like driving to the races on the weekends and signing up for things and being like feeling like I had to do them. And so then I just took like, I think a 2+ maybe year break from doing any sort of race and was like, yeah, I'm just kind of over it right now. You know, like I just want to do something else. I want more flexibility. And I think as with anything, like we can get sick of it, you know, like it's the same with food. Like we can have food fatigue, even if it's something we really enjoy. If we're eating it all the time, it gets old eventually, right? If we're eating it intuitively all the time and we're like, wow, now I'm just kind of tired of this thing. It doesn't mean you've ruined the food for yourself, but you're allowed allowed to take a break from it and to just not want it for a while. And yeah, I definitely think that's true of exercise. And I've also had times in my life where, like you said, maybe stress or anxiety are really high and there's a curve to where like, okay, this is helpful, but now it's not being helpful, right? Like we've gone over to the other side where it's maybe not providing the outlet that I needed to, and maybe I'm turning to it for the wrong reasons. Like maybe that illusion of control, that illusion of body manipulation, that sense of comfort versus the other ways in which it has served me in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think sometimes too, I've heard Robin Noling is someone I really admire, who's a dietitian. I think her Instagram's called The Real Life RD. Mm-hmm. And something she's talked about in blog posts that I've read in the past is you already have a really stressful life, and then we're now adding more because it's still kind of in that fight or flight mode, right? Right. You know, different than what back in caveman times, what the fight or flight mode was meant for. But if we're just adding more onto that load, like you just mentioned, sometimes it can be adding more onto the system and maybe causing more harm than those benefits that we often talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's definitely, again, that kind of fine line between like, can it be helpful and is it really an outlet, to crossing over into the space where no, it's just continuing to add stress instead of giving your body a rest, which it probably needs in a different form. You're just continuing to make it go, 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 and adding to the adrenaline and cortisol that are already accumulating.
Another scenario I wanted to run by you, because it's one that I am not sure I have formulated my thoughts around personally and professionally. And, you know, say if you're running, you're training for a longer race, like a marathon. Typically, I haven't run a marathon myself, so I can't speak from experience, but typically you have some sort of training plan. Mm-hmm. How can you kind of fit your intuition or more of that intuitive movement? What if there's a day where I'm like, I'm not really feeling what's on my plan today? How do we navigate that? Because obviously, if you want to feel comfortable getting up to that mileage, there's a certain amount of work that does need to be done. And I'm just curious how one might navigate that.
Yeah. And it can be really tricky. I think, again, that's a place where if you have entered into training cycle life, like training plan life, whether that's for a marathon or triathlon or any sort of like event that you can get super excited about, there are a lot of things I think that need to lead up to that to make sure that you're in a good space for it. And so like in my work as a coach, that's something that I was always really cognizant of like, why do you want to do this race? Why now? How would you feel if, you know, the reality we're living in now, like the race gets canceled or you can't do it or you get injured? Are you going to be okay? Do you have coping mechanisms in place that can replace running or supplement or complement running so that we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket, right? Like we don't want this to be the end all be all, this sport or this training cycle. So I think first and foremost, like getting to a place where you take on a training cycle, you have to be in a really good headspace. And again, you want to just be really clear on your intentions and your motivations. That being said, I have done marathons, and the reason that I do them is I think that there are few things in life that compare to that sense of accomplishment for me. I don't have any desire to run a 100-miler or an ultra. Like that's not, you know, like I don't, that's not a headspace I get into, but I get why sport as adults especially can be a really great way to challenge ourselves and to work on something and to work towards a goal that can feel really fun and exciting. And so like you said, there's definitely going to be part of a training plan where you're tired and you're pushing yourself a little further than you have before. And I think those are the phases where it's just very helpful to have done the work to be intuitive and to be able to check in with yourself. So like, sure, you can skip workouts, you can not do this, not do that, and still work towards your goal and still accomplish a goal, or maybe fall short of it and embrace that part of it too. But yeah, there's going to be some parts where it's uncomfortable. And I've always, for me, again, because I'm not super competitive, just don't have that bone. When that comes up for me in a training cycle, like one, I absolutely give myself permission to just take it back a step or whatever. But if I'm feeling like, okay, like I'm up for the challenge, that's why I'm doing this, and I'm clear on my motivations and my goals, it's always been a fun way to get used to being uncomfortable for me. When we look at something like an eating disorder or even a chronic dieting behavior, sometimes at the root of that is a numbness or a desire to avoid hard feelings. And uncomfortable feelings, right? We are far more likely to distract ourselves than to embrace them. And so for me, I think part of the reason that running was healing is it taught me, like, okay, you can be uncomfortable and survive, you know, or you can be uncomfortable and it's fleeting. It's not permanent. It's not going to last forever. And again, there's always that very fine line of like, how far do we push ourselves before it's really not good for us? But only we can really figure that out for ourselves.
I think that brings up a really good point about making it through that discomfort. So something that I think of is, you know, holding different yoga poses. You know, I'm definitely no yogi that is on Instagram doing these headstands or anything like that, but I do enjoy it for more of the stress relief. And there are some poses that it does help me to kind of come back to my breath is something they often talk about and right. helps me kind of breathe through it. But you're right. Sometimes, I mean, I've also been in hot yoga classes where I felt lightheaded and completely uncomfortable. So it's kind of, you have to figure out where that happy medium is for you, where you're not pushing yourself so much that it is dangerous and uncomfortable and not a good happy place. But then also at the same time, finding that happy medium of where you are challenging yourself and you are able to cope and get through those difficult feelings.
Yeah. And I think that comes back to what we've said with like intention and intuitiveness. Like if you are in a season of life where something really stressful is happening, like for me, the week or two leading up to a wind event, not the right time to go to a 90-minute Bikram yoga class. Like basically you have to know what your capacity for the stress load is, right? And when does it become helpful versus harmful? And so there may be one hot yoga class where you are able to breathe through a difficult pose and to stick it out. And the next week or even the next day or even the pose after that, you might have reached your limit for embracing that discomfort. And you say, you know what, I need a child's pose. Or you know what, I want to take the easy yoga class this week. And that's completely fine. And we attach no moral value to either decision.
Yep. I love that. I want to shift gears for a second here. And so we've been talking about if you're already kind of in that exercise space and trying to figure out if you have a good balance right now. But what if you're someone who maybe you've never had an exercise, or I keep saying exercise, but what I mean to say is movement routine or regimen or, you know, gardening or whatever that looks like for you. But maybe you kind of associate movement in the past as almost associated with a diet. So you're having a hard time figuring out how can I incorporate movement without going back to where I was when I was on whatever diet that might have been. Have you ever experienced this with clients or seen this before?
Yeah, I think in that space, it can be helpful to get really creative with how you think about movement and the things you do. So like if I'm working with a runner who's injured, we might explore different types of movement that are fun and new, right? To kind of take your mind off the fact that you can't run, even though that's what you really want to do. Or maybe like in eating disorder treatment, that movement doesn't serve you anymore and it's more triggering than it is helpful. Or maybe, like you said, you are struggling to untie a certain type of movement or even a routine of movement from a diet or a diet mentality. In which case, I think we just try to get really creative. And so like, yes, it feels good to move our bodies in some way. It feels good to be outside. It feels good to connect with other people. So one thing that I'll have people do, and this is something I learned from Kara Bozzi, who is a co-founder of Opal Food and Body Wisdom, which is a eating disorder treatment center that caters to or kind of serves the athletic community. She talks a lot about how in some ways, exercise, much like dieting, can meet some of our human needs. And so I'll ask clients, what are some of the needs that that form of exercise may have been meeting for you? So like what we've talked about, sometimes it meets a need for feeling competent or feeling really good at something or feeling accomplished or working towards a goal. So how can we shift some of that perspective to something else, whether that's like painting for the first time or like, you know, taking on a house project or trying to learn a new skill like related to business or something like that, you know, like how can we kind of figure out what those needs were that we were meeting through maybe structured and rigid exercise, and how can we meet them in some other way? And maybe that's a different type of movement, or maybe it's a different category of life thing altogether. Like maybe it's joining a new book club, or like, you know, again, like trying taking on a new hobby or a new, trying to learn a new skill so that we feel like we're working towards something, but we don't, it doesn't have to be movement and it doesn't have to be exercise.
Is something kind of like how you mentioned you've built somewhat of a community with running too, and but you can also build that in other ways. You know, if exercise and movement is not appropriate for you right now, there's so many other communities out there if you're looking for it.
And what I have found to be true is that some people will get a little anxious about losing that community if they're not part of that sport anymore. And what we often learn is those friends are there either way. Right. Like I met a lot of my friends in DC when I first moved here through running, but I still see them and we mostly don't run together anymore. So, you know, like that human connection is maintained with or without the movement or the sport or the community of exercise that it was tied to, if those are truly, you know, meaningful relationships to you. And yeah, there may be some people that you don't really keep in touch with anymore, and that's probably okay. It's not to say there's anything wrong with that person or anything wrong with you, but my guess would be that if you feel a deep tie to that community, that that tie will be felt and experienced in other ways outside of the sport too.
Is there anything else you can think of that would be helpful for listeners as they're navigating through the ninth principle of intuitive eating?
Yeah, I think that just for the most part, be open to checking in with yourself really often about your motivations. Because again, as we've talked about, I think they change sometimes by the day or by the hour. You know, like you have the intention in the morning to go to a workout class after lunch that you really like, or after work or something that you really like, or you might have a plan to meet up with a friend for a spin class or for a run or for a yoga class or whatever. And having the flexibility to go through your day, and maybe a lot has happened and you're feeling emotionally spent or just really physically tired or both. And you can say, you know what, I'm really sorry, I can't go to the class, but if you want to still meet up, we could do something else, or I'll catch you at the class next week or something. I think we have to check in with ourselves and know that how we feel and our intuition are going to change throughout the day or the hour, and certainly throughout different life phases. And I think this principle comes with an invitation to really practice flexibility and have a lot of options for what can provide that need for you. So if you enjoy movement, you enjoy exercise, great, we're all for it, but it can't be the only thing that provides a sense of accomplishment or sense of community or a stress outlet or insert whatever it is for you, right? So I think just checking in on motivations, checking in on intentions, being honest with ourselves and inviting a sense of flexibility, because in any case, there's going to be days where we just don't want to do it or don't have the energy. And I think when you learn to be okay with that, as opposed to letting that really deeply upset you or cause a lot of angst or alter your other behaviors throughout the day, that's where we see the difference between an intuitive movement versus a structured, you know, kind of diet mentality type movement.
And it's a practice. I mean, it doesn't, absolutely, it doesn't happen overnight, just like we don't become an intuitive eater overnight.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on. And I also wanted to give you the opportunity to tell everyone a little bit about WIN, because I'm obviously a big fan of WIN, but I'd love you to be able to explain it better than I would be able to.
Sure. So WIN, mostly unrelated to exercise, but there's some overlap. So WIND is Weight Inclusive Nutrition and Dietetics, and it is how Amanda and I met in person. I do a series of events for dietitians and RDs to be, and we've also had a few fellow, like, kind of nutrition professionals and mental health professionals join us at the events. And the intention was to create a space where we can learn more about non-diet weight inclusive practices and principles and foundations and research without having to rely on, like, the major nutrition conferences that happen every year that mostly don't create a lot of space for these topics. So it's a community. We have a Facebook group of RDs and RDs-to-be and nutrition professionals. There's a newsletter. We have ongoing events, most of which are virtual now and kind of for the foreseeable future. But I do think the in-person event is really crucial to personal development and connection and growth as well.
I can attest to that too. And because I met so many people there, you know, I went last February and then I went this couple months ago. It seems like a lifetime ago at this point.
Oh my gosh, I know.
But, right. But, you know, I've met so many people there that I still connect with. And I just felt so encouraged by that because sometimes I've moved now, but when I had gone those past times, I was in South Dakota and there's just not really a lot of dietitians who share this right. weight inclusive mindset around dietetics that I do. So it made me feel more encouraged. Like I wasn't, you know, swimming in the sea on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that community feeling is so, so important. And I think what we hear from a lot of people who come to the events, even though they're pretty small, is like it just felt good to be surrounded by like-minded practitioners, and it felt good to connect with people who felt like this is as important as I feel that it is, because it's kind of hard to find that sometimes.
Well, where can everyone find you if they want to follow along, listen to your podcast, follow you on Instagram? Yeah. Give us your information.
The podcast is RD Real Talk, and my Instagram is also at RD Real Talk. But if you are more interested in this conversation around intuitive exercise and non-diet sports nutrition, I talk a little more about that on my private practice account, which is Heather DC RD on Instagram. So yes, I have two Instagrams. Not my smartest decision, but it is what it is. And my website is heatherkaplan.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Heather. And I am wishing you the best of luck on baby number two.
Thank you so much.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you to Anchor for again hosting my podcast. Be sure to download and subscribe this podcast on Apple or your favorite streaming device. If you're looking for ways to get started on your own journey towards food freedom, head over to my website at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/course to get started on my self-paced course. If you need more individualized help, I also offer virtual coaching, and you can get in touch with me at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/virtual-coaching. To get show notes from this episode, you can go to spillingthebeansnutrition.com/podcast. And of course, if you're not already following me on Instagram or Facebook, I'm at spillingthebeans_nutrition. Our album art was photographed by my very own little cousin, Brittany Preller, and our theme song was written by Daniel James O'Connor and is used under the Creative Commons license.